If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we are talking about starting your own polyprocessing group. And with us today, we have two special guests that I'm very excited about, Nicole and Steve, who started their own polyprocessing group that I've been to a couple times and was an awesome experience for me. I've talked about it on this show a little bit before, but we're going to get more into that, how they started it, what that's all about, the importance of having a support group to process things with. And then also, hopefully, some tips about how you can go about starting your own and finding that kind of community. So welcome, Nicole and Steve.
Thanks.
Yeah. So I guess just to start out, I would love to introduce you a little bit more than I have already. So you two are poly. You're a couple.
Yep.
How does that fit in with your poly journey? How long has that been going on? The basics.
Well, since the beginning of our relationship, which is next week, we'll be celebrating 3 years.
Wow, congratulations.
Thanks. Which is not a long time, but it is a time. Yeah. Wouldn't you agree it is a time, Nicole?
It is.
So
it's a time.
We've been open from the beginning. My first conversation with Nicole, she mentioned Dan Savage's term, monogamish.
Yeah.
Right.
From our first talk. So that's been from the get-go.
And then he immediately said, are you sure you just want to be monogamish? And I said, oh, well, maybe not.
What else is there? Yeah. What does that mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So part of what I really like about the processing group, too, is that it's not about being experts and like giving advice to people. That it's just about, hey, we're all on this journey together, no matter how long we've been doing it. Because there are some people in the group who've been poly for like 7, 10, 15 years, right? Like long time. And then other people that are brand new to it. But everyone can still come together and share wherever they are on that journey, which is really cool. So I guess for the listeners out there, like, you don't have to be some like veteran poly expert.
We are definitely not veteran poly experts.
How long ago did you start the group?
I guess 9 months ago.
Okay,
so like
yeah, it's a pretty new group.
After a couple years of being poly, you started the group.
Yeah. We probably started thinking about it about a year ago, and then I think our first group meeting was right around the first of the year. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
We had been going to other groups through different things, poly discussion groups, and we found that we were wanting a certain kind of interaction, and so we decided to start it ourselves.
That's awesome. So basically it was, because there are, in LA, we have lots of poly meetup groups, poly discussion groups out there, of varying sizes, everything from a few people to 100 people or 200 people, right?
Yeah.
I think in other parts of the country and of the world, there's not that abundance of poly groups. We did an episode maybe like a year and a half ago with a couple people in Arizona who started a group, because they're in Tucson, not even in Phoenix. And so they were like, there's like a little poly community that's mostly people.
Very little.
They were like, it wasn't really people that we felt like were our peers. And that's another thing, too, is if you're creating your own group, you can kind of choose how diverse or wide that group is. I think there's something to be said for diversity in a group. And also something nice about having them be your peers. You kind of feel like we're dealing with similar things. I think there's benefits to both of those. But they started their own group, and now they have this huge group in Tucson. So I guess I'm saying this because even if there aren't poly discussion groups in your area, there are probably other people somewhere around who are looking for that.
Absolutely.
So that's awesome. okay, so to come back real quick, then also, in terms of, like, what is it that you brought to the group, in terms of your background in training? I know, Nicole, you've worked in education for a long time and bring a lot of that background as well. And mm-hmm. Steve, I know you're going through some more schooling and training right now that's also related to all of this. Could you share a little bit about that background?
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of brought two different parts of my life together in the group. One is in education, and I'm in progressive education that deals a lot with listening to children and developing the curriculum through a method of listening and questioning and analysis. So we don't mm-hmm. have, we're not directing it as the teacher. We're kind of facilitating what comes out of it. So cool. That's been 10 years of working that way. And then mm-hmm. I also was part of another separate community having nothing to do with Poly that's, mm-hmm. That was around coming together as a group through this, through process work, with a few different influences. From Arnie Mandel's work, which is deep democracy, to different therapies. And we've met twice a week for the last 7 years. And we really go deeply into emotional lives, conflict between members. It's a lot about sort of speaking openly as a community. Mm-hmm. And, right. and we all bond on that front. So when I kind of had this image when I got into the Poly world that, like, that would be there and be that way. Mm. And it was to some extent because there's so much communication that goes on.
Right.
But I found I wanted to, like, bring a little bit of that world into this new community that
so you used the term process work. Uh-huh. Could you just explain what that is?
What I can that try. That is also not something I'm totally an expert on. Which, but it's the idea, I think, and feel free to jump in, Steve, if you like. I think the emphasis being on the process that someone is going through and sort of the processes that are happening in the room real time between members. So, say, for example, and sometimes, like in that other community, we'll decide, okay, we want to look at gender issues and process that, and we'll kind of take on different roles and in real time look at what's happening between me and another person. But it might be, say, I have a conflict maybe with Steve. Mm-hmm. We'll bring it up in the room, and then we'll talk about it, but we're also looking at what is the underlying process that's happening between us right now, or even if I'm just sharing something individually. So an attention to sort of the emotional life and the undercurrents.
And you're talking about the process that's occurring potentially between you and Steve, or the process that's occurring between you and the person who you're speaking to at that moment?
Or the whole room. What's
that's
happening
really
in the
cool.
room? Like, is the whole room silent right now because we've hit an edge where people aren't comfortable speaking?
Huh.
We're going to, in a group that's oriented that way, we're going to notice that. Hey, we're silent. You know, someone brought up X, Y, and Z, and now the whole room's afraid. So we're looking at what's happening with us in this moment, and not with not judgment or trying to make it one way or another, just simply speaking to what is happening.
Or even necessarily giving advice, but rather just, like, sharing in the experience.
Absolutely.
That's super cool.
Absolutely. And like I said, I'm not an expert, so if someone's listening to this, like, you didn't hit it quite right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we really, we're drawn to this kind of work for different reasons. And for me, it has a lot to do with shining light in the spaces and spots where I was taught not to do so.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, you know, shadowy stuff that we sort of brush under the carpet a lot. This kind of work celebrates getting into those dark cracks and crevices and honoring and expressing vulnerability and being in a room full of people where we can witness one another in those spaces that we normally hide from others.
Right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, where we feel like we need
Of course, in this kind of a non-traditional, non-monogamous approach to relationship, we are actively and willfully engaging with, you know, if we're going to have any kind of legs at all in this kind of exploration, the darker side of things that maybe we haven't had a lot of chance to look at in our lives.
Mm-hmm. And the two of you, I mean, do you facilitate the group and you ask questions, or what exactly do you do within the group per
se?
That's
a great question.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I was going to say I feel like I brought to the table for this group was confusion.
okay.
You see, one of the impetus for me to start this group was because I knew that in my exploration of non-monogamy, I needed support. As I started to talk to my friends who weren't approaching relationship in this way, to bring my sort of like pickle to the table.
Exactly.
If you pardon my pun. They would often, you know, I'd get the dog hearing the strange sound kind of cock of the head, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so I realized I needed to, find some folks. So that's definitely a part of it. And then in terms of facilitation, I just want to say that our aim is to create a container of receptivity.
Okay.
So we're not trying to be active facilitators necessarily, but we're both kind of opinionated and, you know, and sort of like wanting to you know, help ourselves and others understand stuff, and a little bit alpha, I guess. So so that does happen occasionally, but the aim is to sit back to allow the genie to come forth.
Sure.
Which happens in a kind of, you know, there's a little bit of a Borg thing going on with a group situation where things are happening that as are a result of a group listening intently, active listening.
Yeah.
If for me, the group, the way it is, where it's just kind of, you started out, you talked to people about the intention of the group, which I do want to be sure we cover soon. But then it's just sort of whoever just kind of feels moved can start to share. And it just, for me, reminds me so much of like prayer circles in my Christian upbringing.
Interesting.
Oh, wow. Just kind of
goodness.
In that
or Quaker meetings.
Exactly. Too, like, totally. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that there's something to it. Like, there's a reason why prayer circles are done that way. Cause I think there is something, you know, in Christian terms, it's about sort of waiting to be moved by the Spirit and kind of letting the Spirit guide the discussion group. And I think, but I think that is tapping into something that's there in terms of the way that we all just kind of, humans are so adept at feeling each other out in a group setting where you're coming in with a sense of listening and receiving and paying attention. There is sort of a cool thing that happens in that group of like, you know, I'd like to share, but not right now. Could I share later? And everyone kind of keeps that in mind, for example. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there's just sort of a nice, when everyone comes together to care for each other, you can just kind of let it happen. It doesn't have to be like, okay, we're going to have a list, like this is who talks first, or this is our theme, or any of that.
Right. Yeah, we're going to answer mega structured
these questions. Right. And I think one thing that I've seen from other groups, or even in my teaching, is when people start things, they feel the need to have a very strong structure because they're worried that people won't share, it won't go somewhere, it'll go in the wrong place. But I think one of the keys to holding the kind of space you're talking about is that there is, of course you can kind of meander, someone could take over, you know, it's not, but there's no real wrong space to go in. It's keeping an attitude of what is actually in the room right now, and how can we, I'm also an improv performer, so it's reminding me of improv also. Yeah. How can we go into that and support that more deeply? But in process work, they talk about sensing the field, what's in the field right now, what's in the room, either being ignored or being expressed. So we are keeping that in mind as we work. Yeah.
Yeah, and oftentimes use I statements. When I go to seminars, workshops, panel discussions, things like that. And certainly facilitators I've spoken to who have facilitated these types of things, they've talked to me about how early on in their experience facilitating, they were nervous. And so they felt a lot of need to fill the air, like fill the space.
Right.
You know, the way we've come, I don't even really like the word facilitator, even though we use it. Really, our intention is to get away from that.
Yeah.
Because we've, you know, a lot of people we've been programmed to just go to these kinds of events and then be passive, sort of like someone is telling us where to go and guiding us and leading us, and we don't really do that. We're looking for that uncomfortable space.
Yeah.
We want ourselves and others to encounter it in a way, support whatever needs to come or wants to come through in those kinds of moments. So
that's
our intention
really, cool.
really has a lot to do with a subtractive kind of process rather than an active, additive kind of influence.
Yeah.
And I think that carries over into the next thing that I wanted to talk about, which is about what for me was very profound about going to the group. And that was, you mentioned earlier briefly the container, that you create for the group. And I want to talk about that now, because basically it was that I came into this group, and I've been to other poly discussion groups and things like that. And, you know, and I'm someone who has a podcast where a lot of it is kind of advice-based, right? Mm-hmm. We're trying to share information, like give people tools, help them to solve some problems, stuff like that. And that coming into this group, one of the things that you mentioned very specifically at the beginning of each meeting is that it's not about giving advice. It's that maybe that could happen, but that's not where we should start. That's not, you know, if you think of some advice, like hold on to it, sit with it for a while, and then maybe see if it's appropriate to share. Which kind of ties into a lot of other things. But if I could first, do you think you guys could kind of give us the intro spiel for the group, or sort of a quick summary of that? Like not maybe the whole thing, but just kind of a quick, like, this is what we set up, so that people could kind of take that into their own groups.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think we talk about that for us, often, especially with difficult emotions, which was one of the main points of the group, is to explore the difficult emotions in poly. We always say we want to celebrate the good, but we found we needed support in the difficult parts. So often what transforms difficult emotions is the act of listening, and a deep act of listening. And I often tell a story about when I was first dating Steve, I was on the phone with him, and I was nervous because it was our first phone call. And I realized I was listening to him only to think of the next thing I would say. And I thought, oh, I'm going to stop. And I stopped. And 1 second later, he said, God, you've really been listening to me.
Which was wrong.
But he felt a shift. And so we invite that people listen with a sense of spaciousness, and to let go of specifically advice, so that that people can be really heard in a deep way, because we feel that that's what actually transforms people. And often advice giving comes because maybe I feel uncomfortable with the depth of pain that I'm witnessing in somebody, and I want to fix it. Or and so we ask people to, sometimes you might have a really good piece of advice, and plenty of good advice still happens.
But to
not let that be your first response, because it often is, to see if there's something first that you can listen deeper, but also maybe a deeper wisdom will come through past the initial.
That's
sort
really
of like
profound.
This came out of a response I was having, and her as well, to some of the early discussion groups that we were going to. We found that there was plenty of people who were kind of new to poly or curious about it, who were bringing up questions and issues, and there was a lot of really well-meaning veteran poly people who were basically saying, oh yeah, you'll get through that and you'll see, it's just so wonderful. And we kept looking at each other like, when is anybody going to get to any of the substance of?
Yeah.
So at that point I realized, because this is a profoundly radical thing to go non-monogamous. I mean, I really believe that. We're going against a cornerstone of relationship, you know, in the zeitgeist.
Socialization.
Yeah.
So I thought, I need a place where stuff can get a little bit more messy, potentially.
Wow. I mean, that's amazing just for communication one-on-one in general, because so often you communicate and you feel as though you're not being heard. And, like, this person doesn't understand you, because like you said, one may be thinking about what they're going to say next, or what advice they're going to give to that situation. And, yeah, just even the fact that you were able to, like, feel that shift in her actually listening to you, that's really amazing to me, and something that I now really want to take into my relationship. So thank you.
Yeah.
How lovely. Yeah.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Something else that really struck me about the group is that you mentioned that when you're sharing something, when you're the one who's choosing to share, you can specify beforehand, or maybe right after you shared, whether are you looking for advice, or do you just want to be heard? Like, do you want people to reflect it back to you and say, well, here's what I'm hearing about what you're saying, or do you not want that? Because sometimes you don't. Sometimes you just want to be heard. And that also even could be mid- advice. You could be like, you know what? Actually, I'm sorry. Like, I actually don't want that anymore. I was mistaken before. I don't want to hear that. Yeah. And that, to me, brings up two super important things in, I think, in life in general, but especially within, like, the sex-positive community and the poly community. And one is what we call meta-communication, but it's basically telling someone the type of communication that you're hoping to achieve, like the triforce of communication we've talked about before. To help them know how you want them to respond, because they might not know if you want advice or you just want to be heard.
Sure.
Or if you want sympathy or applause, right? They don't know unless you share that with them. And then the second part is that it's tied to consent. Mm-hmm. And the idea that in active informed consent, consent is not something that's given once and then is there forever. Mm. It's something that's constantly being given and can be taken away at any time for no reason. Okay. And it's that idea of saying, you know what, actually, I don't want this advice anymore, and that's okay. Mm. That there's not some shame in that. It's not like, but you said you did. You no take-backsies, right? Like, so I think it's really, to me, is really important because it helps foster that idea of consent and also better communication by kind of being as clear as possible about what you actually want to get out of it.
Yeah.
So that for me was really powerful to hear that kind of container is the word that you use. Mm-hmm. I really like that. I love that
linking it to consent. I'm going to steal that in the group.
I assumed you'd already thought of it.
I had not. But it came from a specific moment in one of our very first groups where I had shared something and then I was getting getting advice, and I realized midway that I actually didn't want it, and I did stop the person and say, like, I appreciate it, but I actually don't want it. And it ended up really deepening our friendship,
That
person, and he later told me that it changed how he communicated with people and made him reflect, and so it was this really... So that's where that piece came from, one of our first groups of being I actually feel totally overwhelmed by you giving me this right now. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's so powerful, too, because it makes it about what you want to receive rather than if we felt like we had to sit through it might make me be like, oh, I fucking hate that guy that just kept giving me that advice. Yeah. Like, even though they might have the best of intentions.
Sure,
but it kind of brings that power back to you to be like, you know what, actually, I'm going to take ownership of what I want and don't want out of this.
So that's part of what we're trying to encourage is that self-advocacy. Mm-hmm. Like I said, navigating the terrain that I am aiming to navigate and that I am trying to hold space, there's another great phrase we can talk a bit about too, for others to navigate, is that vulnerability, that shadowy stuff is elusive and feral, and it can go away just as away just as soon as it pops up, and oftentimes I find for myself when advice comes in that's very cerebral and intellectual and I don't feel like someone's listening to me, that kinda, feral cat goes darts back into the alley and is gone.
Yeah.
And so these kinds of things lay the groundwork for allowing those things to come into the light a little bit more so that we can learn more about ourselves.
This just makes me think we could do a whole episode about, like, cats and dogs as, like, metaphors for how we...
that feral cat.
It was so viral, right?
Yeah.
You just put a good cat video with it.
Oh, yes.
You're right. That'll be a video. explain communication and seduction and cuddling and everything in the framework of pet dogs and cats.
I love it.
But I love the idea of consent as an ongoing, active, alive, organic process.
Right.
Because many of these things that we encounter when we talk about emotions and our inner lives are not static principles that we can open up Merriam-Webster to page 542 and get a definition for what jealousy means.
Yeah.
Like, these are pointers in the direction of places where we can have inquiries with ourselves about our own feelings. But there's a lot of gray going on there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So consent as an active, alive thing, it certainly is a wonderful thing. And just quickly say that SPLA, which is the group under the, is the umbrella of the group that where we have this meeting to begin with,
right.
is a really a great group that advocates for self-advocacy and nice. For this idea of consent being an ongoing active.
Yeah, there was, it must have been a couple of months ago, but we did an episode where I talked about going to the SPLA orientation and that consent exercise that they do about saying, you know, practicing saying no and practicing mm-hmm. negotiating and all of that is really, really powerful. I'd love to do more on that. We actually might, we just met someone yesterday who might be a guest to come on and talk about consent soon.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Lots of exciting things coming up. Okay, is it okay if I change topics
Absolutely.
A little bit here? Okay, so something that has come up in both of the discussion groups that I've gone to is language and the power of language, how that the words that we use affect the way that we think and the way that other people think. And Nicole, you, this is something that you've actually studied at work with children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's seeing the way like children are so much more transparent than adults are, which is really awesome about them. And I think the stuff that you were sharing about children, I'm like, fuck, it applies to us as adults too. We mm-hmm. just are so much less like aware of it. Like it's so we hide it under all these other things. Could you share that, the thing about possessiveness
yeah,
that
absolutely.
You talked about before?
A few years ago we were doing research at the school at kind of the communal life in preschool, because preschool is extremely communal. Like we intentionally put 3 shovels in the sand area, so they have to negotiate and negotiate that. And there's no other point in life, really, that I think there's so much communal dynamics going on as in a preschool classroom. So we started looking at what practices promote that and what practices take away. And one of the things we realized watching video of a teacher was, of course, language makes a big difference. And so there was a little girl who they were digging in the yard for bugs, and they'd all set their shovels down to discuss their strategy for bug hunting. and they all came, and some children grabbed different shovels, and some children wanted the same shovels. And the teacher said to the little girl, "Is that your shovel?" And you could see in the video this look in her eye like, yes, that's my shovel. I own that.
Right.
And then he reframed it. Is that the shovel you were using? Taking ownership out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we started to experiment with that. And we realized if we took ownership out of objects or even artwork, children were painting. It was just the painting you're working on. Can someone else join you? There was mm-hmm. much more fluidity between for children and much less ownership and much
like they're
less.
They're much more likely to share.
Much more, yeah, a lot less, that's mine, which you get a lot with 2 and 3 year olds. But we realized so much of our language has ownership embedded in it and how we were reinforcing it as teachers. And so we have a practice now of not as much as possible, is that the chair you were using, is, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Wow.
But it's so embedded that it's very, very difficult. So we're constantly trying to reframe it.
And the thing that for me was really powerful when you shared that is something that I had already been thinking about a little, and this kind of gave me more like framework to put it in, is the language we use around our partners.
Yeah.
My girlfriend, my fiance, my girl, we say it all the time. It's like so part of our language.
And it's so much part of the romance. I listened to your romance episode a few weeks ago. Romantic.
Yeah.
Oh, you're mine. And it feels,
being owned.
Yeah.
But I feel like when you use that language of my, maybe there is some romance to it, or we've been taught that there is.
Yeah.
But I think it also makes it then a lot harder to share.
Yes.
Like it makes the threat of someone else a lot more real because it's yours.
Yes.
Instead of just the person that you were using. Right? Like that's, we were talking about that earlier. You guys had an experience of kind of that sort of sharing, right? Like, this is the person I'm using, right?
Yeah, we were having a meal with a woman that I'm seeing now, and Nicole already knew her, but we were kind of getting together for the first time under the auspice of polyamory, you know, and Nicole was going into that same anecdote about the school. And how did it come out exactly? I can't remember.
It just came out with that statement of, oh, this isn't my man. This is just the man I'm using.
And then the woman I'm dating said, me too.
And we all just
Well, we did reframe it since it sounds so terrible. We came up with a nicer one, which is this is a man I'm choosing.
Okay, that's cute. Yeah. Choosing instead of
I
using.
Like that. Yeah.
I mean, nice. I could go. I would if I would go. I've been going off on the verb to have and the possessive pronouns now for years.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that I'm under the kind of working assumption right now that language is magic.
Yeah.
And that we actually don't understand the degree to which it is casting spells and injecting potions and putting us into altered frames and states of mind just by the words themselves. The words themselves, they're just words, but they aren't. They're carrying connotations and meanings, and and I would love to see a movement away from, like I said, the possession, the kind of orientation.
For sure.
My car, my mind, my psyche, my feelings. Mm. Like, I mean, it's pervasive. It's ubiquitous.
Yeah. And this is, Dedeker and I also frame a lot of things in terms of meditation and like Buddhist teachings and stuff. And it goes right along with that as well, both in terms of the process work of being aware of what's happening without attaching meaning to it. If it's like, hey, the whole room got quiet, or we just touched on something uncomfortable, not putting a value judgment of like, well, this is bad, that's not okay. It just, it is, let's acknowledge it and like live in the world with it, but not try to control it.
And also keep in mind that to say I don't want to put a value judgment on it is we're going to go meta on you. So anytime that we're saying, no, I shouldn't be that way, or I shouldn't do this, this is what I'm trying to move away from as well. I need to embrace everything that's coming through, at least in my awareness, maybe not necessarily in what I'm expressing or articulating, but the shoulds and the should nots, this is terrain to be looked at with a critical thinking lens at all times.
I'm bad about it in practice, but I wish we could abolish should from the language entirely. I'm on board with
this. This leads into the idea of the awesome poly archetype that you may not want to get into.
I know, like, if I ever have an issue in my poly life, and then I'm like, well, I'm supposed to be an authority on this in some respect, and how can I have these issues and still call myself an authority?
Perfect.
So I know that we wanted to talk about that briefly. How did the two of you feel?
It's come up
that?
A lot in the discussion groups.
Nicole started the I Want to Be Awesome Poly Lady thing during our processing. Like, it came out one time when we were getting deep into some difficult feelings. You know, I think you said at one point, like, I'm just so upset. I want to be awesome poly lady.
I've felt that many times.
And we've been unwinding that a little bit, you know, and really where it's taking me is deeper into the places of my vulnerability. You know, if there's shame or embarrassment or shoulds coming up, it's a good little bobber on the surface of the water. That down there tugging on that hook is some vulnerability that wants to come to the surface and be witnessed and be loved and be expressed.
Wow.
Yeah, for me, awesome poly was just, I started to see, it's part of my wheelhouse of my psyche to want to appear competent at all times.
Of course.
So I have an extra relationship with awesome poly. I'm starting to imagine her as this person in my mind, but it's just I don't want to feel what I'm feeling right now, I think, is what I realize. So when she starts to come up, I'm like, oh, okay, what am I actually feeling that I don't want to feel in this moment? Which is often that I want to possess somebody entirely and put them in a cage and never let them, you know, that kind of thing. And so allowing, just like we do in the process group, and allowing awesome poly to have her place also in me.
Well, I think it's almost like this second level too of something that happens, you know, when we share our poly struggles with our monogamous friends or family, like you were talking about earlier, Steve, that it's their response is going to be like either just confusion or, well, yeah, duh, because you're not supposed to share.
Yeah.
Or,
exactly.
Right? Or like, obviously, it's because, you know, sort of pathologizing.
It's because you're doing it wrong.
Right. It's because you're doing this fucked up thing.
Yeah. They don't have a context for it at all, unfortunately.
But then there can be this thing, even when you're in the poly groups. Now you have peers who aren't going to say it's because poly, but you will sometimes, I think some personalities are maybe more vulnerable to this than others, of kind of needing to feel like all these people are expecting me to have my shit together all the time.
Different kind of pressure.
Yeah.
I really felt I had a hard time the last few weeks, went into some like gnarly jealousy, and I felt I did feel very alone, because I felt like with my monogamous friends I couldn't, and that I think it's my own mind, but there's like a badge of honor to getting past certain phases of jealousy that I don't feel like I have, but I can recognize that other people have, and I'm like, just want to get that Girl Scout jealousy badge.
The little patch.
So then I'm like, I can't. I don't want to talk to my poly friends, and I don't want to talk to my monogamous friends. So luckily we had poly process group, and there was space to share, and to share that I was feeling that as well.
I've already like had some really profound experiences with that, and want to. I'd really like to start a group that's up here, because you guys live a little bit far from me. Mm-hmm. But to start a group up here that's kind of a similar thing, like, I think it's such an important thing. And I like that the group stays small. Yeah. I think that's really important. So for those of you out there, if you're wanting to start a group like this, you can absolutely do it, right?
Like, absolutely.
It's something that you can put out there. And even if you only have 4 or 5 people or however many, maybe even 3, like... Mm-hmm. That's still going to be a powerful experience, and it will grow over time. To you know, now you guys have it's capped at 15 people, but every month you have like 30 people on the wait list. Yeah. Like people really want that, because it doesn't exist a lot
of
places.
I really like to think and believe that it's because of what we're not doing. Mm-hmm. Not because of what Nicole and I are doing, per se.
Right. That's really
but it's that subtractive thing. I like that.
You know, we're removing a lot of the impediments, or trying to create a container, hold space, if you will, that removes the impediments to expression.
Right.
And Lord knows, and I don't know why I said Lord, because I'm not, but God knows. I'm going to say God or Lord. I'm going to say Allah knows and Buddha knows that that we need a cohort as we unwind and rewrite the code that we've been living under for generations and generations and generations.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I especially like that 3-person, because the other process group I'm in is... It's 40 people. It's a closed group. It's not open to anyone who comes. But every once in a while, because we've been going 7 years, there's like 4 people that show up for a meeting, because they happen twice a month. And sometimes at first people would feel bad, like, oh, people aren't showing up.
Right.
But then it's well known that the 4-person meetings are the best ones, because you can go so deep and it gets so intimate. Yep. So now people are like, oh, I miss the 4-person meeting.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's great. All right. Thank you guys so much for coming and being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
I hope that other people can start groups like this, because it's been a really amazing thing for me. And I really appreciate you guys for making that a thing that I could discover.
Thanks.
So thank you.
I appreciate you for holding this show and for what you're doing, too.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. If any of you have questions out there about you creating your own groups or anything that you want us to cover on the show, you can write to us at info@multiamory.com, or you can write to us on Twitter at Multiamory, on Facebook, all the things, all the places. We'd love to hear from you. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/Multiamory. Join the discussion there. In our monthly video discussion groups, we've actually started incorporating some of these ideas from the polyprocessing group, and it's been really awesome.
Yeah.
It's really cool. We'd love to have you as part of the community. Thank you so much, and we will see you next week.
Sayonara.
Bye.